I was invited with another seven other survivors of clerical abuse to meet with Pope Francis on the Saturday. It was the day he arrived, actually. We met him later that afternoon in the Apostolic Nunciature in Dublin. We did have a hour and a half long encounter with him that was very, very meaningful.
I know the man who, I don't know if that's the right term for this individual, but the individual, let's put it that way, who abused you, he's no longer a priest. He is now in jail. Is that right?
Well, he's now been released from jail, but he was convicted of his crimes. He was dismissed by the Pope from the priesthood in February 2015, and he was released from jail last year. He was sentenced to 10 years, but they don't serve the full term. He was out after 5 years, so I don't have any problem with that as such. I don't have any ill will towards him, but at the same time, he had to be brought to account. Others were affected by his deviancy. So he had to be stopped, he had to be brought to account, and that's what was necessary for him.
As a man who was in seminary and is now a priest, did you find it hard to be believed and taken seriously?
Well, for a long, long time I wouldn't have said a word about it because it was such a shameful thing. And it had compounded abuse that I had suffered as a little boy aged 4 or 5 by a babysitter, nothing to do with the church. But still it compounded that experience in my very early childhood. And again, the sense of helplessness and of being overwhelmed, feeling powerless, totally powerless. Who could I have told? Who would have listened? No one. No one. And in that context, at that time, in that system, there was absolutely no one to turn to. You couldn't have breathed it because he was a priest. You weren't. You were only a seminarian. You were, and as a seminarian, I looked very young. Some people took me to be in my early teens, even when I was in my late teens, you know. And this guy was already a priest, and therefore he would have been my word against his. Who would have believed me? Certainly not the authorities at that time. There's no way they would have believed me. And so therefore I had, all I could do was shut up and suck it up and stuff it down, which is exactly how I coped for many, many years, you know.
Did he ever show any remorse?
No, none. I confronted him at one point a way back. This was in 2002. And he did beg for my forgiveness. But there was no witnesses, there was just me and him. I confronted him in a non-aggressive way. I says, you and I need to talk about what you did to me when I was a student. And he immediately acknowledged it and begged for forgiveness. But that, unfortunately for me, was not closure, because what happened to me then was the parish that he grew up in, I was moved to. And I was moved to his hometown. And when I was moved to his hometown, all hell broke loose for me, because two very serious incidents had happened to me in that town, and that reopened the whole trauma. And unfortunately for me, I spiralled downwards. And so then when it came, when I suppose took a nervous breakdown, and when I had to be speaking to the doctor, and eventually I had to get help on a long term basis with all of these issues. In the process, it came, I had to be told this man what he had done. And when I informed others, the authorities, about him, he denied everything, to the point where it went to the authorities in the criminal justice system. Police were informed and so on. And then he still denied everything. And it went to the court, and we had to go into the ordeal of a trial. We had to be cross-examined by his defence lawyer and so on. It was horrendous.
Even after begging forgiveness, he wouldn't admit to the guilt?
No, absolutely not. He had only admitted to me privately, and there were no witnesses. There was just me and him. But no, when it came to the part, he was adamant in his denial. So there had to be a trial, and the trial went on for a whole month. And he was eventually found guilty by the jury, and he was convicted.
Before I ask you about meeting Pope Francis, most men would run a mile from the priesthood or whatever, but you stuck it out.
Well, I stuck it out because my conviction that God was calling me to the priesthood originated very early in my life. And I also had very good experiences of priests who were very what a priest should be. So therefore I knew this man's behaviour was not a reflection. And I already had a relationship with God which helped me survive, which I wouldn't have survived without. And so, yes, of course, it's understandable. People will say, well, how in the name of heavens did you decide to be a priest after what you went through? Well, I had already a relationship with God that that helped me to get through that. And my conviction about the priesthood was way before I had any experience or dealings with this particular individual, you know.
And part of that must, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but you really must believe in your eternal reward here to want to actually go through this, which was your own kind of Calvary.
Well, when it came to the business of actually confronting him, I had to do so because there were others affected. If I could have got away with not doing it, I would have. I wasn't relishing at all. But when I was told there's others affected, and they asked me, the police asked me, would I be willing to, in a sense, corroborate some of their experiences. We didn't know each other. I didn't know these other people. But when I heard, I said to myself, you will never be able to live with yourself if you walk away from them. And therefore, it was absolutely necessary for me to have to face into what had to be faced into. I can't imagine anything worse than what that was like.
You must have great empathy for any rape victim in that case.
Absolutely, of course. You know, it does give you, and you're affected. You're triggered when you listen and you hear and you see the trauma. Any trauma, even the trauma of people bereaved and so on, can trigger very easily this rawness in yourself. So, but that is what it is, and in a sense, if you could say, it makes you to be more empathetic of people is a blessing, you know.
In terms of meeting Pope Francis, then that must mean, you know, a vindicating moment for you.
Well, it was a strange moment. It was surreal. I, to be quite honest with you, I really just wanted it to be over. I mean, I didn't feel any great sense of the Pope. You know, I'm very fond of Pope Francis. I'm a great admirer of him. I'm a man who backs the Pope no matter what, and no matter who the Pope is, I'm behind him. But I agreed to go to be part of this meeting, and to be honest,
who asked you to go? Do you want me to ask?
I got a call from Archbishop's House in Dublin, so it was Archbishop Martin, I would imagine, was behind it probably. You know, I got there that Saturday, and we were taken over by Garda escort to the nunciature, and we met the Pope. And all of a sudden, there he was. We were waiting for him, and all of a sudden, there was the successor of St. Peter in the room. He was really superb. But to be honest, all I wanted was home. I wanted to get home away because it was extremely, extremely emotional and stressful. He was superb, but it was very intense. I thought the thing was never going to end. It went on for an hour and a half, and it felt like about 5 hours. And I just kept looking at my watch or clock on the phone and said, oh my goodness, is this never going to be over? I just want to get home. That's all I wanted, was to get home.
Do you think that impacted him to want to make changes in the church?
Well, I've no question that he is intent on making those changes. And I believe certainly this Pope means business. My tuppence worth about it is he's only the Pope. He's not God.
He's only one man. Is
he's
that
only
it?
One man. He's only the Pope, you know. Our hope is not in the Pope, it's in God. Having said that, this Pope, I think, is determined to do everything he can to make a healthier, safer church. And he admitted to us, he says, I have enemies. I have terrible, powerful enemies. But I am doing his, he said he was doing his best, and he would continue to do it, and he wouldn't be deflected. And one of the other survivors said to him, you know, and there were some very robust exchanges, not attacking him personally, but telling him, giving it to him both barrels. And he took it. Like one of the survivors said, you have the people behind you, people will support you, and you know, so you have to know that. So don't, basically telling the Pope not to be afraid, not to be afraid to tackle these people, whoever they are, who are causing problems and to him.
Just in terms of what was said in that room for that hour and a half, was there anything else of significance you felt that came out? Or was it just a straightforward discussion?
Well, it wasn't the time necessarily for that. What did concrete, very, very concrete, the next day at the Mass in the Phoenix Park, he verbatim honoured what he was asked to do by the survivors present. They basically dictated to him word for word what he read at the penitential rite of the Mass the next afternoon. And he undertook very clearly, and he was completely upfront. He's very, what you see is what you get with him.
He seems to shoot from the hip, would that be fair?
Very much so. Even some of the language he used, that was, we were raised eyebrows. He was blunt. He used the word caca.
Yeah.
And we were surprised, you know. But he was just being himself. He was telling it like it is, and what he thought of these people who have infiltrated the church, the priesthood, and the episcopate. And he said that he told us that he had personally removed Theodore McCarrick from the College of Cardinals, that he had removed him. And we said to him, you need to do more of that, basically. And my little few pennies worth of what I said to him was, no matter who it is, at the highest level of the church, if they have covered up, if they have in any way been less than what they're supposed to be, remove them. Remove them. Even to the extent, in some cases, of laicization, dismissal from the clerical state.